So we're talking about manifesting.
Yeah. You said we're going to
take whether we know what that means or not.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you said we're going to take a little ride on the Hogwarts bus. So
I guess I'm the driver then, or maybe you're the driver and I'm a passenger interviewing.
Well, you are the one who coined these stories I tell you as the, that being with me, maybe in my world is sort of like the Hogwarts bus.
I feel like it's if Larry David was driving the Hogwarts bus, maybe.
That'd just be bitching at people about everything. Part of this is about manifesting, but I think that the idea of the author authority in the mirror is that we, like, even when things aren't, you know, there's a phrase in Arabic that the Sufis use called shakur, which means gratitude, mm-hmm. but it's the gratitude for everything. Not just like the things you like, thank you for the money I finally got, but like the gratitude that all experiences, I'm going to say, come to you because you ordered them. And I think being the authority in the mirror is both the part of you that can feel the power of your own ability to actually direct or create. I won't use the word manifest because it's sort of overused. Maybe we want to define that before we say it. But just to say that if you can feel the part of you that's like, oh, this is in my power somehow to create, that's what we're talking about. That you look at yourself and you say, I'm the one who creates this. And then but suffice to say that it doesn't just go for the good things either. Like, or the supposed good things, it has to be for all of it. So, but the empowerment is if you know that you're creating it, then you can figure out how to gain more and more agency in that. And then the other part is that, which I just forgot. Wow, this is going to be a great
talk
podcast.
About building suspense.
Yeah, well, it'll come back. I'm really in a very channely space the last 3 days, very exalted, a lot of amazing things going on. When this happens, like, I feel like truth is sort of pouring into me, and I start something and then I might just lose it a second later. It could just be early Alzheimer's too. So maybe I'm creating that.
So here's a question. On your Hogwarts bus,
yeah,
are we creating reality? Are we co-creating reality? Do you have a completely different frame of mind about her role?
That's what I was going to say. One part is feeling the power that you have to be the creator, which gives you this agency. Because when you give power away, you're not in the mirror to someone else, you're making them the mirror, and that's not real. Or if you feel like a victim because other people are controlling or other circumstances are controlling your life, which is part of the story I wanted to tell you today, that too, like, it's hard to be in the position of feeling like you're manifesting something if you feel like it's happening from the outside in. But on the other hand, you're in the realm of existence as an ocean, as a transpersonal reality. We're all drops inside that ocean. We're not the whole ocean. So we don't have like some agency, like in the movie The Secret, like, okay, I'm going to think about having $1 million and then I'm going to manifest it. No, only the people who made the movie made that kind of money. But suffice to say that I think it's a co-creation, and it's also in its weird way out of your control. But what I would say, it's neither fully your creation or fully your co-creation, or not even something you need to think about it that way, but just to understand that whatever power you have inside of this, inside of existence, like, at least for us in our little podcast, we want to offer to people what part of it that we feel like we do have that power. Because it's not, well, there's a couple of stories I want to tell you. Like, I don't know. First of all, I don't know how or why they happened, but I kind of do know what part I had in it. So the mystery of it is part of the joy, but also I don't really know. I just know that I have agency inside this. I certainly have agency in the way that I'm relating to it, and how I relate to things determines also, that's magnetism, right? Because if I look at something within some negative thing and I just keep projecting that out, I'm not, that's what I'm going to create. So if I, at the very least, at the beginning, understand that my thoughts and my attitudes have a certain energy, and nothing wrong with negative thoughts and being really upset and whatever. It's a question of whether you attach to them. And if you attach them, identify with them, then they do become your reality. So even if you don't know how you won the $1 million in the lottery, because whatever, you still have this power that does create and manifest things on your behalf based on the configuration of your energy. And that configuration is very much made up of your attitude. Mm-hmm. So maybe I can tell you these two quick stories, because they're kind of different. So the short one is, well, the short and the long one is that I, you know, playing piano, I've got these two worlds now. I 35 years doing healing work, traveling, working with people, and that's really what I did. And I took care of my kids that way, and, like, you know, paid bills with it, et cetera, et cetera, as a traveling spiritual teacher. But I was a musician before that. I wanted to be a musician, and I couldn't really handle the lifestyle or the sort of the drugs, rock and roll lifestyle. Like, I wasn't really good at that, but I loved the transformational part of playing music with people and the adventure. And I did kind of end up doing that in my healing work when I left the music business, because I traveled, I played my own music for my breath work. And I was sort of up doing these, like, shows with breath work, if you will. And I did it up until COVID. And then all of a sudden, after, you know, COVID, I got parked, and lots of things happened, a lot of integration, a lot of huge transformation, just rest, healing, got a dog, all that, got an air fryer. And now I've traveled a little bit, but I have found that my interest, my soul's interest right now has gone back to music, and I'm playing four nights a week in a restaurant, and I'm practicing 4 hours a day. And this is way more than I ever practiced in my life, because when I was a young person, I didn't have the discipline. I was very traumatized. I had teachers who hit my hands and all that with rulers. And so I'm in it deep, and I'm now toggling between these two worlds, between this part of me that has been available to help and heal people. I mean, as something I said to one of my clients, students yesterday, that, you know, I'm not the way that I'm nurturing, because I'm not a nurturer per se, but the way I'm nurturing is to be unfailing. If you need my help, you want me, I am so there. That's the way I care for people, with the power of the truth that has been comes through me and gives me to give to other people. So I'm always kind of available to it, but I'm just not sure if I want to be in business, or I want to travel, or, like, how much I want to work with people. And I go between this thing I'm doing in the restaurant and this thing that I'm doing out in the world. So over at the restaurant, I get to sort of work on myself, because being in front of people, it's like, maybe they're going to hit me with rulers. Maybe my mother's going to tell me I sound like a sick cow when I sing, you know, all this stuff. And sometimes I play inside, sometimes I play outside. So I'm playing inside at the bar, and at 5 o'clock, it's just a bunch of regulars. They've come to like me, some of them, but they're there because they feel like they own the place, and they go there for what they're doing. They don't give a goddamn thing about me playing there. Occasionally they do, and I play something that they might clap. But there's a couple people who just loathe me. And this one woman, like, she just, the only time she's spoken to me in a year was to tell me to turn down. And since then, I, like, two or three times, but I haven't talked to her in 6 months, but she comes in, and sometimes she tolerates it also because other people are liking it. So she comes in, and I have had a really profound day of feeling energetically. I'm helping my son right now a little bit, and I'm really picking up on his stuff, and I realize, oh, that sensitivity is there. So I go in, and I'm playing, and I'm like, I hate this energy. Like, this is so negative, something about it. And it's not just her. And I go off and I take a break and I come back, and she and this other woman will, if she's with people who like me, she'll like me. And if she's with that woman, she will also, they were just glaring at me from like 10 feet away. And I was
not
hostile.
Your stunning good looks, not that kind of glare.
No, it was not that. And I was hostile in myself, because I feel like the music is a sacred thing. And as you know, in the human design, like, my center is, you know, like in my throat. So if I sing or put something out to people, I feel like I'm giving a blessing. And I don't necessarily need claps, but I certainly don't. I'm not going to give it to people who don't like it. But I can feel that this isn't, I'm not at work working with people being triggered by me, and I'm here to help them with that. This is just me out in the wild. And I can see that while I'm playing, like, I have such a bad attitude. And I'm like, okay, I just go to, I stop song. I hide behind my manuscript, my, music stand. And I do about 20 effigy breaths. I do a little bit of breath work. And I cast out to the universe, and I just say, tell me what this is for. Tell me what do I do with this? Like, what value does this have? So I stop and I'm like, what am I going to play? And then I just that day, I tried out for the first time. It was just accidental. I thought, oh, well, you know the song Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen? Been covered a million times. Hallelujah, hallelujah. So I start to play that. And the second I get to the chorus, this couple walks in and they start singing in full volume in three-part harmony with me. Hallelujah, hallelujah. And the whole bar just lights up with light, really. And these two ladies have got eyes like saucers, and they're smirking because they can hate it, but everybody else is loving it. Plus, it's kind of funny, right? Because they just walked in and just started singing with me with joy. But the energy of the harmony, everything, it moved me too. So we sang the song, and those two ladies had walked out. the moral of the story comes in a minute. So that's story number one. But obviously there's something to do with manifesting, because I said something and then something immediately happened. And this happens in my life a lot. And I'll just say, I know for people that doesn't necessarily happen all the time the way it does for me. But when I'm talking to people who are interested in manifesting or trying to improve their life, I do try to retrace my steps and say even how I get to the prayer in the first place. So I'll just say that very quickly, which is that if I'm going through something, I want to know what its value is. I don't want to be against anything. I don't want to put up resistance, which is easy. Like, you can mentally say, I don't want to resist, but the body has it. The tension has it. There's a story written inside the cells. And no matter how conscious you are, the body expresses its own difficulty and negativity. But the power of naming it out loud to yourself, and in the prayer, in the invitation of there being a value to it, that has worked for me a lot. I mean, granted, a lot of other work has happened that has made me a more available person, but I think that ultimately that's a gift that anybody could use, which is just like asking what the value of the situation is and letting it guide you in some way. And anyway, so the other story, I'm walking, nobody knows my neighborhood, what I do or who I am, but I walk by, and about 3 years ago, there's, you know, primarily Hispanic and white people here. There stands out, there's this one African dude. I mean, he's very African looking. He's like 6'7". Turns out he's from Kenya. And I've seen him, and I've said hello to him, and he's always completely ignored me. I mean, you're walking down a big street, just you and this person, and there's nobody there, and you're 10 feet away, and you say good morning, and like, he never said anything to me. So I remembered him. So I walk out of my, I'm walking along in the neighborhood, and I pass by, and he is standing outside his thing, and he's like, he's a huge guy, and he's hobbling down the street with like in kind of wincing and sort of like pulling up one of his legs as he's walking. And I don't remember how we stopped and talked, and he ended up unloading this story of his sciatica and his pain and his problems. And I'm just standing there knowing, as I always do, that I can help people. And because I'm available, and I know that that's a gift that God gave me, and I've not spent my life doing mundane things. So some of that power for healing is available to me, but I've learned not to really give it out unless I get the signal from somebody, because if I don't get a signal from somebody, people experience me as being violating, even if I think I'm helping. So he goes on and on and on, and I let him finish, and I'm breathing to myself, like, well, you know, why am I here? Like, why is this happening? And I'm about to say something about something. He's really saying how much he hates humanity and he hates people and people can't be trusted. So I'm going to take a risk. So I said, well, you know, I'm standing right here, and, you know, I don't want anything from you. I'm, you know, friendly. And whatever he said was a discount of that. He ignored it. And I thought, okay, he's not ready. He's not open. And I'm not going to offer anything because he's not asking for anything. And he just really feels and was talking like a victim. And disability this, and people, and the system, and the medical, and all that. Of course, I haven't seen the guy in 3 years. And then the next day, I see him again. And I wave to him or whatever, and I ask him how he's doing, and he can kind of continues his story. And I don't remember what happened that day, but then I saw him like a week later, and he's a little bit softer, but he's upset. He's got to fill out these disability forms. He doesn't have a computer, blah, 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 blah. And I said, you want to come over to my house? I can print them out for you. And so meanwhile, the guy who's like hostile, hates the world, whatever, has never said hello to me. We're hobbling back to my house, walks in the door in my private space. I'm a hermit. I don't have people in my house. And I end up doing this thing for him online. And right at the end, he says, you know, I'm sorry I talked to you that way. I'm just in a lot of pain. I said, it's no problem. I knew when I left you that, like, you're suffering and I'm not going to take this personally. He even had said something to me that first time that was a little hostile toward me, but I think I had told you about it. And I just felt like it's just my opportunity to understand that this isn't my business. So that happened. And then I saw him again, several days later. And then he, I don't know what he asked me. He also asked me if I was Jewish. Actually, that day he asked me if I was Jewish, and I said, why? And there's a certain disposition that he thinks Jewish people have, and I have that disposition. So he says to me, like, what do you do for a living? And I go, oh, here we go. Okay. And also, I'm not working with people that much, so I don't know what to say when people ask me this question. I really fall over myself and don't sound very credible. And also, I'm not going to go say, I'm a master of healing who's been doing this for 35 years. Like, I sort of stand there in the moment and feel what it's like to be a being without an identity. Because I think that being a healer or a guide or a teacher has always been something I could do, but it wasn't something that I felt, even when I was doing it, that I was identified with it. So anyway, I said, well, I do help people like you. Like, I help people with trauma and various things and whatever. And I said, yeah, I could probably help you. And I was also thinking, I don't know if I want to get involved in this and do this. And like, but I feel from a manifesting point of view that every time I meet people and this kind of thing happens, it ends up being very important. And I feel like that because I'm not a self-identified healer teacher for hire, when these things happen, it feels very guided to me. And I just sort of follow it, even if it ends up being something like this person ends up being angry and not wanting to see me again. It doesn't matter. I feel more like inside of the play of it without the resistance. So I said, well, if you want, you could come over and I'll do some things with you. And I think I make a suggestion. And the funny thing is that, you know, so he came over and the total amount of time that actually worked sort of on him with him was about 15 minutes. And it wasn't physically very difficult, but I was sweating and I couldn't take more than the 15 minutes that I had with him. You know, he came in and I had to explain to him a little bit about how I see physical illness and how I will work with people and then tell him what I thought I was going to do and find all the right words. And also not knowing in advance what it was going to be, but finding in the moment and saying it based on reading him. And I needed to also just get a little closer because when I was talking to that guy, I wasn't reading him, but this was me accessing his blueprint because he's given me permission. So I just said to him, I did a little breath work with him, kind of charged him up like a couple minutes, and I worked on his foot around where sciatic was, but I ended up working on his feet. I got him to breathe more. I worked on his whole body, and that was it. And I knew already because of the way I was touching him and what was happening that something was changing. He was even saying so, but just this was yesterday. So this morning I walk out, of course. First of all, he doesn't live that close to me and I hadn't seen him in 3 years. So again, I walk out and I'm walking my dog and there he is. Actually, he was walking outside, almost outside my house, and so we end up walking for a while and he's had a miraculous transformation. He's a bus driver for the city of San Francisco. He's been sitting in this chair for years and years and years and years. And, you know, it's like it's all locked up in there and he's got this huge sciatica problem. It's been going on for 8 months. He can't lie down. Wow. He can barely walk. And then he was out literally walking and it was, he said one part of him was saying it was like a miracle, but the other part of him was like, I want to come back tomorrow and do some more. Like he was also like that when he was over, it's like all of a sudden he wanted to call me this bitch or something. And he's talking about the things that haven't changed. So the pattern of him of feeling a victim and complaining and being in the negative is still there. Like I said to him, you know, this isn't, when you make a transformation, like, yes, we can have a magical moment together, but it's kind of like if you're facing the wrong direction, you could go after a month, you're going very far in the wrong direction. But if I turn you in another direction that day, it doesn't feel like much has happened. So I said, I don't want to do too much on you, but I do want to do enough to change the direction of the energy of what's happening in your body and whatever. So, you know, it's taken me a lifetime to do a lot in 15 minutes and sort of like have it not really even seem like much, but I'm not even really working with people. And I felt like when he told me this, well, I was of course, but so here's my summation of these two things. Well, one, to speak to manifesting, I have these two worlds in these two situations. And one is that, you know, I definitely have a wound, an ego, around how profound it is what I can do for people and how unrecognized I am. And yet I don't have a higher calling to go out and let the world know about it. But I could feel after it happened today that I wanted to tell certain people about it. And there's people that I project some kind of, they don't see me, but I wish they did see me better. Mm-hmm. And so I'm aware that when I manifest this, there's a soul part of it that, like, I like being, I feel that it's my calling to just have things happen like that, because it's more meaningful than it is to be in business. And now, I don't know how how have I made a living all this time being in that way? Like, I did force myself to be in business, but as I've gotten older and later, like, I'm just trying to trust that everything will take care of itself, that, because I didn't charge this guy anything. And secondly, like, when people realize what I can do, it is like they come at me very strongly, and like, he's a 6'7" guy, and he's like, I'm coming tomorrow. And I said, well, I need to check my schedule, and my daughter's getting married, my son's leaving me, I'm playing 4 nights a week, like, I got lots to do, I don't need to do this. But I realized that I have to clarify in my inner self, like, what am I supposed to give, like, how much and in what rhythm. And I think that in these two situations, I think what I want to say about the authority in the mirror is that you're meant to be somebody who has something important to do. Everybody does. Important to you, not necessarily important to everybody else. And that being available to it is to remove all the layers of what you think you should be or who you've been told to be, and layers of trauma around having been that naturally at the beginning of your life and then being, you know, abused or violated or negated for being that person. And I think that there's two kind of jobs here. One job is to try to clear the trauma and remove the conditioning to make yourself available. And the other thing is to understand that, and I know that you understand this so well, is to try to find the authentic, natural part of you that already, you know, like, is designed a certain way to that wants to work, and just to try to tune in of what are the real things that are just available to me to do that. And sorry, I'm just slightly tangenting, and maybe people, I don't know if people are going to follow this, but like, at the end, like, the thing about this guy is that, to me, the deeper part of the work is his attitude, is that he, when I met him, and his anger and his hostility was that he doesn't understand that he caused something. Even when he said I was healing him and I was opening it up and I was fixing it, I kept rephrasing and saying, no, you're doing it. I'm just the catalyst for it. Like, you're going to do this. And I think that part of manifesting is taking responsibility. It's like, ultimately, if I'm really going to help this guy, because yeah, I can do my little magic trick or whatever and I can help him. But if he really wants to get help from me as I really am, I want him to understand that this is his responsibility and his creation. And if he can see that as his creation, he also can create something better. So anyway, I've talked a lot, and by the way, first time caller, long time listener, I'll take my answers off the air.
I feel like that was way more valuable than a Hogwarts bus ride.
Well, I think when you call me the Hogwarts bus ride, I mean, I'm always telling you stories like that. Like, I just meet people in strange circumstances and then things happen. I mean, lots of times nothing happens. I stay home and I'm a hermit and I don't really talk to anybody. And maybe that's my way of protecting myself from being more busy than I am. I don't know. But I think the Hogwarts bus is that there is something at its best is like a ride to me. And I feel like when people come in contact with me and participate in my movie, a lot of only beautiful transformational things happen. And I think, you know, Sarah, my business partner, 13 years, like, she would say that. That's it. She's the only person who sort of survived that ride, because most people, even my children, you know, they have to take me in small dosages, because it's kind of always like that. I feel the availability and the profundity, and that, you know, and I think that the lady that doesn't like my music, whether she understands it or not my music, she's responding to something that's threatening her. Even though, because she doesn't understand what my energy is doing, because I'm not in her matrix. She has a way things should be, and I'm not part of it, so I'm a threat. And I think that, like, part of my Hogwarts bus is that my ability, well, first of all, I am a manifester in human design, so manifesting to me is a very, very natural thing, and I can really bring that about and initiate that with other people if they want to come toward me. But what they're first going to have to contend with is their perception of reality, because my nature will naturally challenge whatever matrix they have organized if it's false. And last thing I'll say is that what I've learned about people when they don't like me, and generally people do, I get along with people much better than I used to, is that the reason why people are not like have a difficulty with it is that, like, people don't see I'm gentle and I'm loving. Like, I didn't come to this life to fight. So I'm a peaceful person, but people often see me as harsh and intense. And it's because I don't have that part of reality that other people have that says that I do things in a way that is like what's happening in the tribe. And they see that as rebellious or challenging, instead of seeing it more as a challenge to their own perception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always found it very helpful in terms the way the human design people phrase this kind of thing as they always describe it as we're energies on trajectories, right? And if you consider that trajectory is like your true line, all the work you do is kind of like getting rid of anything that's in between that being expressed in the world. And you have to remove all that stuff or you don't get the authentic life you're here to live.
You know, when I first started studying, another thing we have in common is internal martial arts. So when I started studying with my teacher, George, he would use all these, he was very philosophical and he had this word, sure, which the number 10 is sure. The word S-H-I, sure, means many different things, but he used it. And when many years later, when I started to look up words as they were written, and also understand that there's Taoist language, which is different than regular Mandarin. Anyway, the word sure was a physics term he was using, which means potential. He would tell me that it meant potential. When he was talking about doing something, well, for him, it was fighting, and he was saying, like, the sure is what you're intending to happen in your mind before it actually happens. Mm-hmm. So during the pandemic, I had a Chinese partner during the pandemic. I put the word partner loosely in quotation marks. But anyway, she was knew a lot about, she was from China. So she educated me a little bit and showed me what the characters mean. And sure is a Taoist term. It means in Chinese, the trend of a wave. And what it is that a wave, it's a physics term that, you know, a wave's going to do exactly what's natural to it. Like, there's nothing unnatural about physics, right? It is already a projected thing. But from a Taoist perspective, it's that if you are sure, like, it's like, how do you become like out of the way of the path that wants to happen? And the way I had described this was that if you throw a ball, I put it in my book, you know, if you throw a ball across a field, that is the actualization of that potential. You throw the ball, you see where the ball lands is actually the manifestation of it. But if I pick up my arm and throw and don't have a ball in my hand, that's sure. That's the potential of it happening, but not the actual. It's just the energy of potential. And I think what you're talking about in human design and talking about life and in manifesting is that you have something that is so natural and so perfect that wants to happen. And your job is to inhabit that potential. It's not necessarily to do something. It's to be something.
Yeah, and, be and receive the response without resistance. And to me, I always view it like music. Like we are a resonance.
Yeah.
And we're, if we do our work, we're an ever purifying type of resonance. And when that gets so pure, then we bring from the field the match. And like, that's the life we're here to live.
And I think when people ask, just as a side note about manifesting, about like doing versus being, you can't have the doing without the being being clear, but you can't have the being without, you can't have the manifestation without the doing of it. So you do have a job when, like, once you organize that inner part to go actually and light the match, which is like to take the action that will advance the wave to its potential.
Yeah. I mean, I think without this full, like, I've read a lot of books on manifesting, like all the ones that talk about your mind as though it's this mystical thing, and then, but never mention any of the other parts. Just a lot of different approaches. And it took me a long time to even figure out what I thought it meant.
Yeah.
Because so many of those opinions seem to be total wild goose chases that actually lead you away from yourself.
Go ahead. Well, you know, I obviously created a system for it, and I said there's four minds, and I do, the linear mind is the one you're talking about, but this other level, what I call energetic mind, is the quality of sure, which is the energetic part of you is who you are on a feeling level, and your job is to be yourself. And I think that is a form of a mind, because it's how the energy non-manifest exists within you before the physical reality. And that, like, if you imagine something, if you imagine manifesting something, that not only is sure, but it's also, it's your ability to organize in the unseen world, to see something, a potential that exists. Like a lot of people, because of conditioning, because of trauma, can't see themselves, can't imagine the reality that they want to have, because it's threatening to do that. And I think that, well, I said there was four minds because there's the body mind, which everyone knows about, the linear mind, which you know about, and then the visionary mind, which is your connection to God. But this mind is the mind where you are seeing the wave. You're letting yourself see it. You're letting yourself see the potential of it. Then you use your regular old mind to organize and make a plan and put structure in place so that it's sturdy, but it moves. And I feel like most, you know, I have, that system came to me, but I have never really heard anybody talk about it in a way that didn't either sound super woo-woo or like kind of like, you know, sort of seven highly successful, yeah, you know, that kind of thing, like Dale Carnegie and Tony Robbins and that sort of thing. But I feel like the energetic reality, and Taoism backs it up, has a way to describe that line of who you are in reality. And I'll say one last fun fact. They have two words for evolution, and one of them means the advancing of the story, which is, you know, meaning the, like, okay, and then now we're following what's happened in the geopolitics this month and the next month. But the other word means to evolve, that the story is an evolution of what's happening. And so from a spiritual life perspective rather than a mundane life, there's one part of manifesting which is just to like move the story down the line or even to make something happen, but it's not to change. It's not to transform. And just to be clear, what we're talking about is the transformation that happens as you become who you're meant to become, because it's endless, and it's not only infinite, but it's an experience of change. It's not just a sequence of events. It's not just a story. It's a change within you. And it's not one side of the door or the other. And then I got the car and the $1 million and then I succeeded. It's not that at all. It's not on the outside.
Always becoming.
Always becoming, yeah.
All right. Well, that's a good concept place to heavy get off today. The bus.
Yeah, you had enough time.
Can you punch my ticket? Thank you very much.
I'll punch your ticket. Well, thank you for tolerating my... Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
Good.